You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
This will not be a definitive discussion about the fight for free speech. No, it won't. But it will be a discussion about the death of talk. What do I mean by the death of talk? When I woke up this morning, I had trouble thinking about anything except the attacks upon white people, white males, with the fake narrative about white supremacy, white nationalism.
Well, if you think you're not racist, you could be right. But in this day and age, that's simply not good enough.
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized to the right.
Those white guys, those middle-aged, boring, nerdy-looking white guys.
But I'm not willing to let white voters off the hook.
I mean, the status quo of our society is racism, and it's comfortable for white people.
Well, I call it white mansplaining.
This idea that white people are objective on racism, which is outrageous. We are the least objective.
It's critical for white people, for people in general, to stop denying their racist ideas.
Next, why it's time to check our bias at the door and lean into the discomfort that is necessary for real change.
The heartbeat of racism itself is denial, and the sound of that heartbeat is, I'm not racist.
And I actually had aches in my chest thinking about the vermin who were doing this and how much they are like the Nazis who pilloried the Jews before putting them in concentration camps and killing them. Now, hold on. You say I'm jumping to conclusions. That's not an apt analogy. Hear me out. I have studied totalitarianism for a very long time. I've studied the history of Nazism for a very long time. The way the Hitlerites began was not by putting Jews into concentration camps. No. They began with a propaganda campaign against the Jews, which went on for years. Do you know the first thing that was done in Germany against the Jews was rather benign? They banned Jews from swimming in swimming pools with so-called Aryans. The Jews shrugged and said, who cares? That's how it began, a little thing like that. You listen to me very carefully and watch out what they're teaching your children in schools about white supremacy, white nationalism, nationalists in the military. It kills me to hear this crap. If it was not for the Private Ryans, or the Eddies as I've called them, 99.9% of whom were Christian white males, most of you wouldn't be listening to me today. You wouldn't have been born. You either would have been turned into a lampshade, or you would have been, your ancestors would have been put into a concentration camp and died there. It was the Eddies who saved us from Hitler. But that's so far away from what they're doing to children in our schools today. As I said, when I woke up, the death of talk began with the images I had this morning of how this constant drumbeat against whites, white males, white supremacy, white privilege, the big lie. And I thought I should do a podcast on it. But I said, who's going to listen to this? Who's going to believe me? And what risk do I run with the few monsters who control the media? What's going to happen if I talk about that? Now, remember, I'm the only one in the American media who has ever been canceled. Never mind the phony lawyers in talk radio or in podcasting. You know, when I was banned in Britain, and I'm still the only person on a blacklist, unable to travel to the United Kingdom, to Britain in particular, because of lies put out about me by the then left-wing government. Do you know when that happened, not one person in talk radio or the media came to my defense? You don't know this. It's astonishing, isn't it? Not one person in the media stood up for me, including those you worship in the media. One of them, who is the biggest fraud of all of them, in my estimation, the greatest con man in the history of the media, actually went on the air and said, I deserve what happened to me. And he poses today as a talk radio host and as a great American. But you buy the act. I was canceled. That man supported it, and no one supported me. So why am I telling you this? Get rid of sour grapes, bitterness. You could say that. I'm really worried about the death of talk in general. I'm talking about how white people are being canceled, white males in particular. When does this witch hunt end? Where does it end? How does it end? When will it end? Will it ever end? Does it end when the guillotine stops falling? Because this is a guillotine that is falling across America right now. The guillotine is falling and falling and falling. And right now, blood is not being shed as a result, not directly anyway. Although I could argue that this rise in violence across America against whites in the streets, against Asians in the streets, is being fueled by this hatred that is being promulgated by the media and the universities. But I'm getting ahead of myself, am I not? So let me go back to the beginning. The death of talk, waking up to the sense that if this keeps up, first they pillory you, they spread propaganda against whites and white males in particular. What do they do next? Well, they cancel you next. They say he said this, he said that, he said this, he said that. And they throw you off the radio, they take you off television, they fire you from a job, they take you out of a laboratory, no matter how good a scientist you are. They stop you from flying a plane, no matter how good a pilot you are. They demote you in the military and promote morons who are nowhere near your qualifications in the military. It's going on right now. So the fight for free speech goes well beyond free speech. I stood firm against an entire government to try to free my name from a list of murderers and terrorists, and I lost. I could not get my name off that list to this day. I had nobody in the media, including all your heroes, came to my aid. But I found secret documents and emails which prove that the British government's conspiracy to besmirch me, an innocent man's reputation. I found that information. It was kept under wraps by both Britain and America's censored Marxist media. You heard me right. And I'm reaching out to people of all beliefs right now, all faiths, all political stripes, who value their right to free speech and survival itself, particularly those who respect the sanctity of independent thought. This podcast today is not about conservatives or conservatism. It's for anyone who expects to continue to have a voice in America. Because when they came for me, you didn't raise your voice in my defense. And when they come for you, there'll be no one left to defend you either. This is a current political crisis worldwide. It is filled with propaganda, cover-ups running rampant in international politics, censorship used by the Marxist regime now in power in America, a dangerous trend globally that continues to sideline the vox populi in favor of dictatorships around the world. I hope to lay out an intricate chain of events which begins with a silent approval of dictatorial powers. First, free speech is removed by canceling people who they say are no good or not good people. Then freedom of assembly is removed under the guise of COVID. And then eventually the entire national infrastructure is eroded. Again, I will go back to Nazi Germany. But I could also go to Castro's Cuba, the Soviet Union, and show you how these failed and murderous aspirations began exactly how we in America are beginning today. This is the Savage Nation. Pay very close attention and find out what happens if you don't stand up for those who are banned. It will lead not only to the death of talk, it is liable to lead to a genocide against an entire race. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
So we're speaking about the death of talk in America and the entire world. Case in point, New York City. A New York City public school, which has been attacking white people and white males relentlessly since the Marxist mayor took over the office of the mayorship, and the mental imbecile that he has running the schools, Carranza, has been attacking white people. They're now asking parents to, quote, reflect on their whiteness. And they actually put out a table explaining the eight white identities, if you could believe this. And so a city public school principal has now jumped into the fray, and he's telling parents to reflect on their whiteness. And he passed out charts and literature that extols, quote, white traitors who dismantle institutions. I'm not making this up. It's in the East Side Community School in Manhattan. And it shows a ranking list entitled The Eight White Identities, which ranges from white supremacist to white abolitionist. This was written by an anti-white racist named Bonar Hess, a so-called associate professor of African-American studies at once great Northwestern University, Illinois, who wrote this, quote, there is a regime of whiteness and there are action-oriented white identities. People who identify with whiteness are one of these, said Hess. It's about time we build an ethnography of whiteness, since white people have been the ones writing about and governing others, said Hess. Do you have any idea how racist he is? Do you understand that this is right out of Hitler's Germany, only now it's aimed at white people? In the chart put out by this racist, there are two extreme identities of supremacist and abolitionist. In between are such categories as white voyeurism. I don't know what that means. The psycho defines it as wouldn't challenge a white supremacist desires non-whiteness because it's interesting. And white privilege, or sympathetic to a set of issues but only privately, won't speak, act in solidarity publicly because benefiting through whiteness in public. Do you have any idea this is a mental illness? This is racial mental illness. This is a man so hateful, so filled with hate towards white people, that he actually put together a chart of the people he hates, put out a color-coordinated meter with the red zone on the left titled White Supremacist, a green zone on the far right labeled White Abolitionist. Can you believe this? And they're sharing it with children in a so-called progressive school on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, which caters to 6th through 12th graders. He gave it to every parent as part of a series of materials meant for reflection and food for thought. Can you believe this? Now, what did the Department of Education say? New York City Department of Education, run by a racist himself. Listen to this. I'm going to read this to you. He said, quote, anti-racism and the celebration of diversity is at the core of our work on behalf of the young people of New York City and the East Side Community School students, parents, and staff partner together to advance equity in their community. Notice the word equity. They've dropped the word equality. They're now using equity, which means as stupid as the child may be, they should have the same equity as a brilliant, hardworking student. But the Department of Education went further. Quote, the document in question was shared with the school by parents as a part of ongoing anti-racist work in the school community and as one of many resources the schools utilize. Could you listen to this? Please listen to me. Can you understand this? This is the new language of public education. The dissemination of this racist literature against white people comes as the Department of Education and the school's chancellor, Richard Carranza, one of the worst and most idiotic people you could ever imagine, have pushed to eliminate what they call current administrators, quote, white supremacy culture. I'm not making any of this up. This is not out of Animal Farm. This is out of communism. This is out of socialism. This is out of fascism. This is out of Nazism. This is genocide against white people. They went on. The administration has embraced anti-bias training across the board, with teachers and staff forced to attend slideshow presentations denouncing the current culture's paternalism, unquote, and power hoarding. Are you listening to this? And where are the parents on this? Want to hear this? Listen to what people are saying, the racists. If you find this hostile or unnerving, it's because you're fearing the loss of power and advantage that your skin color has afforded you. It's an agenda to bring true equality. That's what they're saying. Others are saying this is what a public school spends time and money on. Anti-racism like this is a poison. Now remember this, the makeup of the student body at Eastside Community was 55% Hispanic, 18% white, 15% black, 10% Asian, and 2% other. What did the principal say, Mark Fetterman? Fetterman made headlines in 07 when he tried to prevent the arrest of a student accused of punching a school safety agent. The principal was arrested after scuffling with another agent during the fracas but returned to school later that day. So the principal's a far-left radical himself going along with this madness. This is like a blood-borne pathogen that has entered the bloodstream of American education. It will lead not to the death of talk, but to the death of white people as this hatred continues to percolate up onto the streets. I'm Michael Savage. Pay very close attention, because tomorrow it will be you.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on demand.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Okay, we're continuing our discussion of the death of talk and, of course, the attack upon white people by the entire racial injustice industry, which I'm afraid will lead to very, very dire things in this country if they are not stood up to. A new article came out in so-called Medical News Today. Everything you need to know about white fragility. This is being spread through the universities as though it is truth when it is pure racism. I'm going to read pieces of it to you and explain what these people have done. What do I mean by these people? There is an entire industry of hate being promulgated as anti-racism, an entire industry of hate being promoted under the guise of attacking white supremacists, Nazis, Ku Klux Klan members. They're so clever that they have devised a technique that if you get angry at them for saying you are a racist, your reactions may include anger, fear, guilt, arguing, silence, or walking away from the stress-inducing situation. These bad people have the nerve to publish this crap and then say, quote, by behaving in this way, white people may prevent people of color from attempting to talk about racism with them. Are you listening to this? If you react with anger to them attacking you, or if you argue with them, if you walk away from the situation, they call you a racist. They go on. Different sources of racial stress that white people can experience may come from a person claiming that a white person's views are racist, a person of color talking about their racial experiences and perspectives, a person of color not protecting a white person's feelings about racism, a fellow white person, you hear this, a fellow, all whites are fellows, a fellow white person not agreeing with another white person's perspective on racism, a white person receiving feedback that their behavior actions had a racist impact, a white person being presented with a person of color in a position of leadership. This is pure, unadulterated racism. Medical News Today? This is not medical news. This is what the Soviets did when they used psychiatric hospitals to jail dissidents. Read the Gulag Archipelago by Solzhenitsyn, and you'll see what's going on in the country today. Stand up to these racists, whether they are white or not white. Anyone pushing this idea of white fragility, white supremacy, white guilt, is a racist by definition. Listen to what they write, and they call this medical news today. White people in the United States have protection from racial stress. Engaging in conversations about racism may trigger a range of defensive actions, feelings, and behaviors, such as anger, fear, silence. Although white fragility is not racism, it may contribute to racism by dismissing white domination and racial conditioning. By developing racial stamina, listen to these words. These are insane people. White people can better address racism and strive to become anti-racist? Ladies and gentlemen, I think what I need to do at some point in this podcast is, instead of getting angry at these racist, low-life, low-IQ people, I think I'm going to read to you white male inventions at the end of this podcast. Just white male inventions will say it all, because you can't argue with the realities of the fact that about 98% of all of the great advances in civilization were advanced by white males. I'm sick and tired of listening to this garbage. They're taking the best minds of our generation and targeting them and destroying them and taking them over in the universities to begin with, in the corporations to follow with, in the schools, wherever you turn. Where did this come from, this whole idea of white fragility? It was invented by a person named Robin DiAngelo, who has a so-called PhD in so-called multicultural education. Her specialty is whiteness studies and critical discourse analysis, which is total bullcrap.
And I'll never forget asking a group, okay, so what if you could just give us feedback on our inevitable and often unaware racist assumptions and behaviors? And I'll never forget this black man raising his hand and saying, it would be revolutionary. And you know, just take that in. I just want all the white people to just take that in. Revolutionary, that we would receive the feedback with grace, reflect, and seek to change our behavior. That's how difficult we are. That's how big a-holes we are.
Can you imagine if someone created a course on blackness studies, or studies about the hatred of blacks towards other races, or the hatred of Hispanics towards blacks, or the hatred of Mexicans towards Americans by calling them gringos, or the hatred of those in the islands calling white people howlies, or the hatred of white people in other parts of the world by people of color? Can you imagine this? This term came from a piece of garbage written by DiAngelo in 2011 in Multicultural Education on Race and Social Justice called White Fragility. They say the term became popular, and Robin wrote a book on the topic to further push the big lie about how white fragility is promoting racism. So then she says, how does white fragility differ from racism? Listen to this garbage. Quote, some people may define racism as the belief that a particular race is superior to another. However, others may refer to this as racial prejudice. Sociologists define racism as an unequal distribution of privileges between white people and people of color. Racism occurs when white people benefit from an unequal distribution of privileges and people of color experience deprivation. Let's look into that for a minute. An unequal distribution of privileges. So if you are born into a poor family and you grow up in a crime-ridden neighborhood and your parents kill themselves to save enough money to move out of that bad neighborhood and move you to a, quote, better neighborhood where there's less crime, and there happen to be less people of color and more people who are white, that's an example of racism to these people. In other words, you should all live in a crime-ridden slum in order to be equal. Is that what he's saying? They then go on to examining the various ways in which racism may be impacting health care, driving racial inequities in health. Are they crazy? Are they out of their mind? This definition of racism, she writes, only applies to white people. See, only to white people due to white privilege. That's the most racist statement in this article. They go on. Historically, white people have not had to experience the same oppression, inequality, and discrimination that people of color have due to white people holding power. That is such crap. I'm the son of an immigrant. We experienced racism, we experienced oppression, we experienced inequality, We experience discrimination. And you know how we got around it? By working our asses off and working our way out of the ghetto. That's how we did it. Like every other immigrant group, we worked our way out of poverty. And for those who don't have the brains or the drive to get themselves out of poverty, they're trying to say to you, you owe them something. Listen to what this idiot next says. I'm quoting now from a medical journal. Quote, white people may be against the definition of racism, but experiencing white fragility can contribute to racism. That means if you stand up to them, you're a racist. Listen, it gets even crazier. This is something out of the Soviet Union. Quote, a white person defending themselves or arguing against white superiority prevents conscious discussions with people of color about race and racism. Go to hell. Just go to hell. I can argue you into the ground. You're telling me not to even say a word to you? You're that. You talk about fragility when you're that stupid. That's fragility. When you can't hold an argument, that's fragility because you're a dummy. I warned you years ago on my radio show that when unqualified people were put into the university and they could not keep up with real demanding academics, they would invent departments like multiculturalism and write papers and give themselves awards. And then they would start to take over the whole university with these fallacious arguments. I'll go on. They go on and write, people experiencing white fragility may not be racist. Oh, gee, that's awfully kind of you, Robin. But their actions, behaviors, and feelings may promote racism. Avoiding the topic of race contributes to racism. By disregarding the notions of white superiority and white privilege, racism will continue to hold its place in society. Shall I go on? I'll read a little bit more. Due to this absence of understanding and experience, white people lack what Robin DiAngelo calls racial stamina. Listen to the crap that they invent. She says white people can develop racial stamina by having direct experiences with people of color and engaging in sometimes difficult conversations with them. Why don't we engage in a difficult conversation, Robin? And let me ask you something. Why is it that 98% of all of the great advances and inventions in the world were advanced by white men? Can you answer that question? She can't argue because she's not here, but I can argue with her because I'm here. This is my podcast. This racist, Robin DiAngelo, goes further. And she says several factors lead to white fragility in the U.S. These include, and I'm quoting now, segregation. That means if you move away from poor neighborhoods where there's a lot of crime, you're moving into a segregated neighborhood to get away from crime, and therefore you're a racist. She attacks universalism and individualism. Do you understand that this is communism? Do you get the idea yet? Do you understand that this whole racist argument is about pushing Marxism under the guise of equity and equality? She says that if you want to get away from crime, you're exhibiting segregation, racial arrogance, racial belonging, psychic freedom, and white dominance. This is astounding. Listen to the rest of this psycho. Quote, most white people live in segregated areas. In these segregated lives, white people receive little information and education about racism. This means that they may be unable to think about racism critically. This can lead to an inability to consider the perspectives of people of color. Due to segregated living, white people may perceive a good school or a good neighborhood as white. Although discussions about what makes a space good are likely to be racially dependent, white people may deny these ideas. So let me explain that to you, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Podcast world. Here in San Francisco, there is a high school for gifted children called Lincoln High School, I believe. And the majority of students who got in based on their grades and performance were Asians. Aren't Asians people of color? No, they're not. Once a racial minority can excel in academics, they're no longer a minority. They're lumped in with evil white people. So what did they do in San Francisco? They're trying to eliminate schools for children who are smart. In New York, the same thing, the Bronx High School of Science. There used to be a school called Brooklyn Tech. Really smart kids went to those schools. The admissions were very difficult. You had to be really a whiz kid to get into Bronx Science or Brooklyn Tech. You had to be really smart. Everyone knew that. Nobody called it racism or segregationism or racial arrogance or white dominance. We knew they were smarter than most of us in math and science, and no one argued against it. So now that you have armies of unqualified people trying to break down the walls of academic excellence in order to destroy any differences between kids, what you have now is the meltdown of excellence in America. Where will our engineers and scientists come from if this garbage is allowed to go unanswered? Where will our future inventions come from if they take unqualified kids and mix them in and tell you everyone's equal? Well, yo, we all have equal access to education. We all have equal access to books. We all have equal access to exhibit our intelligence. But it doesn't mean that our native intelligences are the same. Do I have to make the crude analogy of a football field for you idiots to finally get it? Why are sports teams dominated by people of color? Because they're better athletes, by and large. Is that a racist statement or is that an observation? Why are no 120-pound white kids quarterbacks or fullbacks on football teams? Because they can't be, because they'd be crushed. Don't you think there are differences in IQ between different people? Even in the same race, aren't there some people of color who are smarter than others? Are you arguing all people of color have the same IQ? That would be absurd. That would be like saying a lobster has the same IQ as a shark or something to that effect. So you're saying there's no differences in people within the same race? Of course there are, both physically and mentally. And yet these Marxist, communist, low-life mental defectives write these papers on garbage like white fragility and white supremacy and white this and white that, which is absolute fascism. And you, on the other hand, don't say a word. But I take the chance of saying more than a word. And that is why today I am talking with you about the death of talk. You must stand up to these racist goons or you will lose not only your nation, but your freedoms. I'm Michael Savage. Thank you very much. And please share this podcast on the death of talk.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
We're continuing our discussion of the death of talk, and we're going to lead to where it's leading. I told you it could lead to genocide. Before it leads to genocide, it will lead to the death of our heritage and identity and Western civilization itself. Now, first of all, I know that's true. That's obvious to anyone with a brain, except for those racists who are pushing this whole notion of white supremacy and white fragility, whatever they call it. The president of France, Emmanuel Macron, figured this out and got together with intellectuals in France and said that France is being contaminated by the leftism of America.
The unique way to preserve our democracies is to reestablish a public and democratic order in this new space where our people think, live, and more because of the pandemic as well, I have to say. This new governance, in a certain way, has to be democratic and discussed between our leaders. And I think this is very important. And for me, this is one of the critical challenges of our times. All the platforms, and let be very politically incorrect, but all the platforms sometimes which helped President Trump to be so efficient, at the very second when they were sure it was over of the power, suddenly cut the mic and put the mic on mute, killed all the platforms where it was possible for himself and his supporters to express himself. But it's not a democratic answer. I don't want to live in a democracy where the key decisions and the decision to cut your mic, to to be sure that Ben is not in a situation to speak anymore because of a speech is decided by a private player, a private social network.
Are you listening to this? In a speech in October on the, quote, fight against separatism, Macron, French President Macron, warned against leaving, quote, the intellectual debate to others, as he cautioned of these certain social science theories entirely imported from the United States. His education minister, Jean-Michel Blanquer, also warned in October that there is a, quote, battle to wage against an intellectual matrix from American universities. I've got to read more about this to you. Because France is known for its intellectual capacity, America is not. The French are known for thinkers, America is known not for thinkers. And the politicians and prominent intellectuals in France, including the president of France himself, are voicing concern that, quote, out of control leftism and cancel culture from the United States is threatening French identity and heritage itself. And they're trying to fight it. The debate over there came to a head after the new director of the Paris Opera, Alexander Neef, published a 66-page report on diversity at the company, in which he vowed to diversify staff. Why did he do that? Well, it came after five black members of the ballet company circulated an open letter among the Paris Opera's 1,800 employees calling for greater diversity. In other words, because they weren't being advanced beyond their abilities, they wanted to be advanced because of their race. This is how it goes on. Okay? This is how it happens. Are you listening? Neef, this idiot in the opera, was targeted for this absurd decision by Marine Le Pen and by French newspaper Le Monde, which said he soaked up American culture for 10 years while he worked in Toronto. In other words, his mind was warped and poisoned. This month also saw the publication of a book by social scientists in France in which they claim that race is a bulldozer that destroys other subjects. Boy, is that well done. They added in their discussion to the New York Times that they did not believe race should be studied as an academic subject in France, as the secular government does not recognize it. Fabulous. Now, this is amazing. This is amazing. They're trying to disinvite well-known speakers in France, again, students of color. They're trying to destroy the civilization of France because it was too French. And so as a result of this, they're bulldozing France itself. Some French intellects have also argued that American universities are to blame for giving justification to acts of terrorism carried out by Muslims. Are you listening to this? After three Islamist terror attacks, Education Minister Blanquer accused the university of being complicit. He was supported in an open letter from 100 prominent scholars that blasted social theories, quote, transferred from North American campuses. One of the people who signed that letter argued that American influence led to a, quote, sort of prohibition in universities to think about the phenomenon of political Islam in the name of a leftist ideology that considers Islam the religion of the underprivileged, unquote. A historian argued in the same way that the American style black question, quote unquote, was a totally artificial importation to France. Now listen to the punchlines here. He said that it was all driven by, quote, hatred of the West as a white civilization, unquote. The common agenda of these enemies of European civilization can be summed up in three words, he wrote. Decolonize, demasculate, de-Europeanize, he wrote. Quote, straight white male, that's the culprit to condemn and the enemy to eliminate, unquote. Ladies and gentlemen, I warn you, the cancel culture in this country, the death of talk in this country, the targeting of white people in this country will lead to genocide and the death of civilization itself unless you, the listener to the Michael Savage podcast, demand that your voice be heard and not be silenced by the racists who are trying to silence you through the fake notion that by standing up for yourself, you're a racist. I'll summarize again. Out of control, woke leftism and cancel culture from the USA is a threat to France because it attacks the nation's heritage and identity, according to the French politicians and intellectuals and the president of France itself. But it's not just France that's standing up to this anti-white racism, which they called white privilege. Okay, it's England. Nigel Farage pointed out that Coca-Cola is forcing its staff to take training courses from the very same evil, left-wing, radical, liberal professor who came up with this whole garbage on white fragility and teaching their staff how to be less white? Do you have any idea how psychopathically racist this is? How to be less white? Can you imagine teaching a course on how to be less black? How to be less Asian? How to be less whatever? Who would take this? Why don't they all stand up and say, drop dead, go to hell, I'm not doing it? Because they're afraid. Listen to what Farage is saying about Coca-Cola forcing its staff to take training courses about how to be less white. You will not believe this.
Coca-Cola, of all people, have now clearly lost their marbles because they're now putting their staff through compulsory training how to be less white. So to be less white means you'll be less arrogant, less ignorant. I mean, the list goes on. Try to be less white. And the inference here is clear, isn't it? That white is bad. White means supremacist. White means you look down your noses at everybody else. White means you are guilty. And this is what Coca-Cola is foisting upon their employees in the USA. I do hope this is something that doesn't cross the Atlantic. But until we have more people, far more people, in British politics and British media, unafraid to stand up and tell the truth, unafraid of the extreme left screaming racist at them, even though they know themselves that that would not be true. Until we do this, I fear we continue down this route. And what is telling white people they are guilty and bad? What is that doing? Do you think it means that white people who are exposed to this suddenly think, ah, yes, I must become a better person. I must make sure I exhibit within myself no prejudice towards anybody? Or does it actually make white people really, really angry and actually make them feel that society is now more divided than it ever has been?
The old world does not want anything to do with what the new world is exporting. They realize what it is. It's not about equality. It's not about equity. It's about the death of Western civilization. It's about the destruction of an entire race, which will lead to a Holocaust and genocide unless we all stand up at work and say, no, hell no, I won't go. How come nobody in America is standing up to them? Where are the leaders in America? Where is one Republican saying, no, this is over? No, this is wrong. This is racist. No. Tell me, where is that leader? The old world does not want anything to do with what the so-called new world is exporting. I'm Michael Savage. This is food for thought, is it not? I sure hope so. Stand up to the racists, no matter what color they may be.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
A big emptiness in this discussion of, quote, white privilege is the fact that any minority who excels through hard work and high IQ is suddenly not considered a minority, and they're lumped in with white people as though that's something evil. And I'm talking specifically about the anti-Asian discrimination going on in America today. Now, many of us understand that Asians excel in America because they inherently have a love for learning, they're hardworking people, and frankly, they teach their children to study. It's drilled into them from childhood. And so if you look at the anti-Asian admission policies going on in America, you will see that the Asians today are the, quote, new Jews. Now, why do I say the new Jews? Because there used to be quotas on Jews in the Ivy League colleges and elsewhere early in the 20th century. Did you know that? They held Jews to much higher admission standards than applicants from other groups in order to prevent their rising in the universities, because there were too many successful children who were Jewish getting into the schools and moving ahead. So they discriminated against them. Well, that's in the past, isn't it? No. Now they're doing it to Asians. It's being done by de Blasio in New York, who is eliminating any differentials in the excellent schools like the Bronx High School of Science or Brooklyn Tech, because there's too many, quote, Asians. It was done at UC Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley, when too many Asians, quote unquote, were getting in. They started to discriminate against Asians. Why is the civil rights community silent on this issue? Why? Because the civil rights community is not a civil rights community. It's a business. And it's a business that's in charge of defending only one or two races. It's not about equality. A federal judge ruled recently that Harvard does not discriminate against Asians. That's a complete lie. Harvard does discriminate against Asians. They do not have equal opportunity. The fact of the matter is they must fight even harder than they are now. Because discrimination is wrong, no matter who it is directed at. And Asian Americans must fight affirmative action and support equal opportunity in order to be given fairness in the college admission process. Most first-generation immigrants from China do very, very well here because they're hardworking and they know everything depends upon them. We all know that there are ballot initiatives that make it illegal for the states to discriminate against or grant preferential treatment to individuals based on race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin. We know that. But we know it's done all the time. And it's all aimed at attacking whites and Asians. Everybody knows that. Last April, Democrats in the state legislature of Washington actually overturned that ban of discrimination based on race, sex, and color. Are you listening? Overturned it. Democrats in Washington state said discrimination is fair game. They did not care what the Asians said. Can you believe this? No matter what the people say? And so, my friends, equal opportunity must be for everybody. It's not just a slogan. Affirmative action is anti-equal opportunity. Affirmative action is preferential hiring. When universities say that race is only one factor among many, unquote, considered in the admissions process, what they're doing is stacking the deck against Asians. A lawsuit was brought against Harvard by a group of Asian students and parents, and their research showed that an Asian American applicant with a 25% chance of admission would have a 35% chance if he were white, a 75% chance if he were Hispanic, and a 95% chance if that Asian were African American. Is that your idea of fairness? No, it isn't. It's discrimination, whichever way you look at it. Quotas are ugly. Preferences are ugly. It is shameless. It's un-American. It's insulting. And it must be fought against. We need equal opportunity in the United States of America.
Fans of the spoken word, welcome. This is a podcast. Greetings, pod recipients. You are entering the Savage Nation. Read the book. See the movie.
So, Riley, what has been helpful to you in combating racism?
I think it's helpful and important to talk to other white people about racism. And I think a lot of people, they don't want to be racist. They don't think that they're racist, but they also don't know some of the things that they believe or say are and can be racist. And I think one of the like effective ways is just to talk and kind of help teach them about why some of the things they believe or say or think are wrong, mm-hmm. not necessarily racist, but that they're wrong. And that'll sort of like chip away and, you know, contribute to some development in this area, but not necessarily take somebody from like being a racist to mm-hmm. not being a racist in one conversation.
And it's just always being open to learning about racist things that we may have said or done without judgment and defensiveness.
On today's podcast, about the white privilege lie. It's a big lie, how extremists are using race to destroy Western civilization. I began with a discussion of the constant big lie against, quote, white privilege, which is leading not only to the death of talk, but the death of Western civilization. I gave examples of New York public schools actually putting out a chart on the levels of whiteness, demanding that parents examine their whiteness. This is right out of Hitler's Germany, in the name of left-wing fairness. This industry of hate is being promoted by academics on the left. They've invented terms like white fragility, means if you stand up for yourself or your children, they're saying that's white fragility. Are you listening to this? And where this is leading, according to the president of France, this so-called wokeness in the United States of America, as it is being exported to France, will lead to the death of France, their culture, their civilization, and Western civilization itself. This guillotine is falling across America right now. Violence in the streets are being fueled by this right now. Cancel culture is part of this right now. This industry of hate is promoting violence. Ladies and gentlemen, it will lead not only to the death of talk, but to the death of civilization itself. I'm Michael Savage. Thanks for listening. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed and learned something from it. And I want to remind you of something that I think is important for you to know. We have over 280 Savage Nation podcast episodes available to you absolutely free. I'll say that again. You can go back into this vast library of over 280 episodes and listen to any one of them or several of them at your leisure. So you never have to be without the Savage Nation. Thank you very much for listening.